Welcome to the latest episode of The Vegan Pod with myself, Rachel New. In celebration of November being World Vegan Month, today we're looking at how veganism has grown around the world and how it manifests within different cultures. I think it's fair to say that the vegan movement has come a long way since its formation over 70 years ago. With the number of vegans in the UK at an all-time high and a record number of people globally taking part in last year's Veganuary, it's easy to think that veganism has taken over. But what is the story in other countries? What does veganism mean in other cultures? And how easy is it really to travel and eat around the world as a vegan? We'll cover all of this and more in today's episode. Joining me today is tour leader and co-founder of World Vegan Travel, Bridie Reed, along with CEOs Saori Kondo and Nadia McKechnie of Vegan Consulting Japan, who are the official agents for the vegan trademark, helping support its growth in Japan. Hello. I would say good morning because it's morning for me, but we're really truly global today. So it's bedtime for you, Bridie, isn't it?
That's right.
And it's decently the afternoon for Saori and Nadia in Japan. Hi. Good afternoon.
Tea time.
Nice. I'm going to start, as I always do, by asking you about your own journey into veganism. So Bridie, what led you to veganism and when did that start?
Sure thing. So I was a vegetarian from the age of about 7 years old, growing up in the UK, and I became aware that people were killing the ducks that I would go to feed at the local pond. They were shooting them, and that was really very upsetting for me, and I stayed vegetarian for many years. And then in my early 30s, I was living in Vietnam at that time, and my husband purchased for me an iPhone. It was really a new kind of gadget at that time, and I learned about these things called podcasts very, very early on. And this podcast was called Vegetarian Food for Thought, and it was hosted by Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. It was a vegan podcast at that point, and the words just resonated with me so, so much, and I just consumed all of that content like so much for about like a year and a half or so, and it was just so mind-blowing to me. And of course I became very vegan, and it told me why I should possibly consider going vegan and also how to go vegan. So that was it. That was in 2009, and a few years later, I became friends with that person, Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and she's a dear friend to me now. And we actually collaborate and run luxury vegan group tours in different places around the world. So, yeah, it's kind of strange that she was like my mentor and my guide in the first few years of going vegan. And then, of course, she's now a good friend, and we work together on World Vegan Travel.
What a great journey. And I love that you described yourself as very vegan. I've never heard that before. It's like, you know, oh, can you be more vegan than just vegan? I like it. It's a gold standard. Let's aim for very vegan. Thank you, Bridie. Nadia, how about you?
Well, my story, I think like a lot of older vegans, sorry, I'm giving my age away here. I went vegetarian first after a friend told me about a documentary he'd seen on factory farming. It was about 1988. And at that time, it was the time when vegetarian really went mainstream. There was cruelty-free cosmetics, suddenly no fur campaigns. So it was really easy. And, you know, I also joined some kind of AR groups and, you know, went to a few festivals and stuff like that. And I think I was sort of heading towards vegan already then at that point. I'd given up wearing leather shoes and things like that. And then in 1989, I came to Japan. I've been here over 30 years, and I discovered that vegetarian was not a thing here. There were no options, no vegetarians, no vegans, nothing. But somehow I kind of coasted on in my own little kind of vegan bubble or vegetarian bubble for the next 20 years. I met my husband, he became vegetarian. We raised our daughter vegetarian and so on and so on. But I always felt a little bit like something wasn't enough. I wanted to go back to be involved in animal rights stuff again. You know, I was always thinking, you know, a bit uncomfortable. And then about 10 years ago, I came across the book Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer. in a bookstore in Tokyo, and I checked some of the YouTube links in the back and decided immediately that I was vegan. I should shift to vegan. And that was it, really. At that point, I suddenly felt like my ethics and actions had finally come back into line. I felt like I'd been living slightly unauthentically for about the last 20 years. And then I got involved in vegan activism in Japan and became Tokyo Vegan Meetup organizer. And finally, we're now doing vegan consulting Japan and with the trademark agent for the Vegan Society's trademark in Japan.
Thank you very much for that. And one of the things I love about doing this podcast is it doesn't matter what the kind of episode is about. In essence, there's always great recommendations for podcasts and books and recipes and everything. So I have not read that book, so that's good to know. And you know, it's always good to have a new vegan book in your on your bookshelf. Thank you for that. Saori, what about you? Obviously, you're Japanese, so you're living in the land where there are no vegans or vegetarians.
Yeah, right. So my vegan journey started, I think, was in 2013. I first became vegetarian. I was still going to those fast food chains before I became vegetarian at the time. And a friend of mine and I went to one of those shops. Fast food shop, and then we were both eating hamburgers. Then he said, I was vegetarian before, and then I responded without thinking, saying like, oh, but I think humans have rights to eat meat. And then I thought, hang on, but if this guy asked me why, I don't think I can answer to that question. Fortunately, he didn't ask me that, but then I wanted to know the answer. Then on the way home, I rented 3 different documentary films and I watched them all 3. And then the moment I finished the films, I became vegetarian. Then I was vegetarian for 2 years. Then my boyfriend at the time was vegan. And one day we went to this bar, ordered some food, and he didn't eat one of the food I ordered, which I thought was vegan. Then it was not vegan, actually. That made me realize that I was not careful. Then that moment I decided to become vegan. Since then I've been vegan for about 8 years or so, was it?
Yes. Congratulations. I think it's quite common that people, and it's really interesting that you mentioned it, Nadia, with sort of older vegans. It's quite common that you've taken a long vegetarian journey to become vegan. And I think it's very different for young people today, because they kind of, you know, there are the options to go straight into veganism, whereas I think back in the 80s or in the noughties, if you're in Japan, there wasn't the options. So it was like, it was hard enough to be vegetarian. That felt like a big enough step, whereas now there's sort of almost, there's almost no need or no excuse for that kind of bridging thing of being vegetarian. So it's really interesting. So we're talking about veganism across the world, and we know that for centuries people have been eating plant-based diets in countries like India and Israel, and religions like Buddhism and Jainism and Hinduism that also incorporated vegetarian ideas for thousands of years. What do you think, Bridie, to the idea that this is a fad, veganism?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. There are many cultures, and within different cultures, different groups of people that have chosen to not have meat in their or animal products in their diet in any way. I'm thinking of the Shantyasok sect. It's a part of Buddhism, a sect of Buddhism in Thailand, and they are vegan all of the time, you know, no matter what time of the year it is. In other parts of Thai Buddhism, for example, they're vegan for a few days a year as part of their religion, as part of their culture, and that's very much well respected. But the Shantyasok people, they do it all of the time. And of course, you know, for example, people in West Africa, they have been eating, you know, predominantly plant-based and, you know, pretty much completely vegan for thousands and thousands of years, like before colonization. And these are things that I think as vegans, we often overlook. We often kind of think that it's sort of started in the 20th century in England, but actually, you know, these ideas have been prevalent for thousands of years throughout history. So when we sort of start digging deeper into that, it doesn't feel like a fad at all.
I'm interested to know from you, Sari, because obviously, you know, you just said, well, both of you said, Nadia, you said you came to Japan and it was really difficult to be a vegetarian. And for you, Sari, who, you know, who are Japanese, I've never been to Japan. I would love to go to Japan. I've just read a classic book by a Japanese writer called Tokyo Express, which I'd never read any of his work before. I don't know if it's classic over there, but it's a Penguin classic over here. So anyway, I love reading about Japan. But I've never been. And my idea of Japanese food, I would have thought that it would have been, there would have been quite a bit of vegetarian and vegan. I think of tofu and, you know, I think of soya being used. But so you kind of blown it out the water for me to think that it was very different. Culturally, when it comes to sort of meat eating and non-vegan food, is it very difficult to be, because being vegan in a country where it's difficult because it's unavailable is one thing, but where it's culturally very difficult, as in people are like, what, why are you doing that, you know, your mum gets really upset because you're not going to eat what she's prepared for you, is that the case in Japan?
Yes, absolutely. Culturally difficult, yes, very much a difficult, because people really like to share food, and also culturally people tend to eat everything you're served, whatever food you're served. And if you cook yourself, if you live in on your own, that's probably easy. All the ingredients are available, like a tofu, soybeans, like as you said, and it's easy to cook. But if you go outside, you eat out with your friends or colleagues or family, and that's the time that people face really difficulty.
I mean, Sari and I hosted like hundreds of Tokyo vegan meetup events in the last like 7 years. And what we heard from the Japanese members was very different from the foreign members of the group. The foreign members like literally come to Japan from all over the world, and many of them are vegan. But most of our Japanese members were pretty much in the closet. I mean, they literally were secret vegans, or they were vegans, part-time vegans, or they were vegans, like, for example, in Japan, we have lots of socializing to do with business. And so people would go out to the kind of social event with their business colleagues. And then, you know, somebody just orders a bunch of dishes and you're supposed to eat everything and then just pay a bunch of money at the end of the night. And so people would go out and they'd eat like about 5 edamames or something and have a beer and then have to pay like, you know, £50 or something. And they would literally just do that for years or try to avoid the social situation. So it's very difficult because, as Sari said, people in Japan, we have a culture in Japan of very, you know, everyone sharing everything. And so if you don't want to eat everything, you're seen as being selfish or, you know, troublesome. You know, people don't really understand the ethical reasons, yeah, or the environmental reasons. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting and difficult because, yeah, it, you know, I think in England, certainly, and in lots of parts of the world, we think about purely about the inconvenience of the unavailability of vegan food, or, you know, yes, sometimes you have to get into a boring conversation with people about why you're, you know, at a time you might not want to have that conversation about why you're vegan, but actually it's a whole different thing if there's those kind of cultural pressures that actually you're just seen as you know, not being very nice to the people you're with if you're not eating what they've made for you. And that is, no one wants to do that. No one wants to be that guy, right? Or we're just trying to not eat animals. So yeah, tough. How big is the vegan movement in Vancouver, Bridie? You're in Vancouver at the moment. And I know you've been all over the world, actually. So you're probably a great advocate to tell us more about other places in the world. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But what's it like in Vancouver? What's it like in Canada?
Sure. Okay. So I just moved to Vancouver at the start of the pandemic in 2020. So as you can imagine, the first year or so, couple of years, it was quite difficult to really sort of get into the Vancouver movement, Vancouver scene. And actually, I live in a town 45 minutes north of Vancouver called Squamish. And so I haven't really been able to immerse myself in activism and meetups as much as I have in other places. In Bangkok, I was really in doing a lot of that all of the time. However, I can certainly tell you that Vancouver is, you know, it's a very progressive city. I think this can sometimes help move a place forward in terms of veganism. There's a huge activism scene. It gets a lot of coverage. There's tons of great restaurants, vegan stores, events, expos, all sorts of things. So, you know, from a slightly outsider's perspective, I think that it seems to be doing very well indeed.
That's good to hear. And obviously, going back to the situation in Japan, it has been very difficult. Is it starting to grow? And I'm also interested what might be driving it, because I always, you know, the thing that I find fascinating about veganism is that it's got this sort of three-pronged approach. So some people will, you know, become plant-based, you know, purely for their health. Other people, it's purely about the animals, and other people, it's purely about the planet. And for lots of people, me included, it's, you know, it's all three are really important. So I'm interested to know, is it growing in Japan? And if so, which is the biggest driver in that?
So in Japan, unfortunately, there's no like animal rights nor like big organization around animal rights in Japan. And one reason is that there's not much media exposure and people don't really talk about it. And because of that, the culture that mentioned briefly earlier, that people don't really like to talk about like it, those stuff that or I'm vegan, or you know, and a lot of people we assume are vegans in the closet, and so vegan movement doesn't really exist in Japan as yet. No, like we don't really have like that movement in the UK or in Canada.
But I'm curious to know the vegans, you know, and obviously the you know, both of you, you know, you run the vegan consulting and you're the agents for the trademark right over there. You know, the people who are vegan, what are their drivers, would you say?
Oh, so there's a tendency that the veganism is seen as a like healthy diet. And so when we talk about veganism, and people often talk about, not about animal rights, but people often talk about health and healthy diet. And people frame veganism as a healthy lifestyle because that's what people are interested in.
Oh, but in reality, we found that most people that came to Tokyo Vegan Meetup had seen videos about animals on YouTube, though, didn't we? So people would like talk about the health aspects or something and say, oh, I'm vegan because it's healthy. But then when you probe a little bit more, you find that they're actually more interested in things like the animals and environment, but that's still not socially acceptable to say. So we even have weird things happening in Japan. Like, for example, we have like vegan restaurants or vegan businesses which are in the closet too. I know that sounds amazing, but like last week, for example, there was a pop-up in Shibuya. I'm sure you've heard of Shibuya, like a big in a department store. And all the products in the pop-up restaurant in the kind of department store were vegan, all the food products. But vegan wasn't written anywhere on the menu. It didn't say plant-based, it didn't say no animals, it didn't say vegan. Because the company was like too scared of like alienating people by even writing vegan. So we have quite a bizarre, I mean, isn't that just weird? We have a bizarre kind of scene here.
Fascinating. And actually, some people would say, my partner always says, you know, we need to get to a point where things aren't necessarily labeled vegan because they aren't necessarily separated out, you know. And what do we say? Maybe we say it's a kind dish, or it's a cruelty free dish, or it's, you know, or something. And so in a strange way, although very difficult to be a vegan pop-up who isn't saying they're vegan, it's like people have to find you by stealth, but in a strange way there's something in that taking. Eventually we may get to a place where things don't have to be labeled, because that's actually the more common situation than the other way around, but we're a way off that. But that's fascinating. So here is a question for you all, but I'll start with you, Bridie, and I suspect that you are going to have some interesting answers to this. Where is, in your vast experience of traveling around the most vegan friendly city according to you?
All right. Okay. This is always a bit of a tricky one. And there are some places that are, you know, there are lots of blog posts that come out. I think Happy Cow just released a report on the most vegan friendly cities, and it's places like London and Berlin and Bangkok and stuff like that. And that's true. They are incredible. I'm going to say something that, you know, that took me by surprise. Just a few months ago, I went back to Paris. I've been to Paris many times in my life. I lived in France when I was a vegetarian, and in 1999, 2000, something like that. And I would go to Paris and I would look for a vegetarian restaurant. There was like two listings in Lonely Planet or something like that. And they were these little sort of hole in the wall, and certainly not, you know, French food. And as I said, I go back there quite frequently. And it was just this most recent trip when I was on Happy Cow, and I filtered all of the restaurants just by vegan. And then I looked at the whole city. Now, I even from 2 or 3 years ago, it has just exploded. I invite everybody to get out Happy Cow right now and to just go and have a look at Paris, because of course French cuisine is not vegan friendly at all. I think ratatouille is the only accidentally vegan traditional French dish that's in the whole country, I would say. And this was just really, really sort of mind-blowing to me, given the how it was in the early 2000s. And you know, they even have there's a chain of about 4 or 5 completely vegan patisseries now that do all of the macaron and the croissants and all of these kinds of things. Like I said, there's lots and lots of different restaurants. Some of them are like fast food and, you know, French cuisine, but lots of them are, you know, you can get vegan boeuf bourguignon and French onion soup and crème brûlée and all of these kinds of things. Now, Paris still definitely has a long way to go. There's not a lot of vegan options in non-vegan restaurants. You might be lucky, but it doesn't really matter so much from a visitor's perspective, because there are just so many incredible vegan restaurants to try in Paris. So maybe a little bit of a controversial nomination, but that's fine.
Good. It's good to hear. I mean, I spend quite a lot of time in France, and I spend quite a lot of time in rural France and Normandy, and it's literally chips and salad. You know, that's if I go out. So I don't eat out very often. But yeah, it's interesting, the patisserie thing. I think that's really, I think because, you know, their patisseries are so beautiful and fantastic and usually so completely full of butter. It's like there's nothing you can have. So once they crack the patisserie thing, it's like, oh, wow. And we found in Normandy a boulangerie who would notice would make you vegan croissant and vegan pain au chocolat, and they were just amazing. So yeah, you did have to, and we found, someone told us about them, you know, it's kind of like a bit like the underground, you know, if you go in and ask, they'll make them for you. So so that's interesting to hear.
It's true, yeah, because, you know, you have the French cuisine, which, you know, generally French people are very, very proud of. It's considered to be one of the best in the world. And then you have vegan activists or baktivists that are just doggedly determined to get it right. And, you know, I think it's those kind of two things which have led to such incredible results in the French vegan scene.
Well, it's good. It's good. It's good news. In a 2022 report by theveganworld.com, looking at the most vegan friendly cities in the world, by the way, Chiang Mai in Thailand actually beat Bangkok. But Thailand's an interesting one, because I think they have a lot of naturally accidentally vegan dishes, but they do have a penchant for egg, which catch you out. You've got to make sure there's no egg in it. And what about you guys? You know, how much have you traveled outside of Japan, and where would you say is the most vegan friendly city, Nadia?
London definitely is the most. Well, I mean, England, I think, in most cities too, is the most vegan friendly. I mean, I think coming from Japan, we probably have, and living in Tokyo, we have a little bit different perspective. We count vegan friendly as having options in most restaurants, because that is the only thing that allows the vegans to come out of the closet and join general society. So I feel like when you go out to eat in London, you can basically eat anywhere they can make you vegan food or there's something to eat. While in Tokyo, in 99.9% of restaurants, there's nothing. Everything has animal stuff in. So we really feel that although we absolutely love 100% vegan restaurants and we love to go to them, we really feel that the key to spreading veganism in Japan is having mainstream options in every restaurant.
I agree, because just like you were saying, Bridie, about Paris and France generally, you know, you might be able to find a vegan restaurant, but you can't find options, you know. And it's, you know, lovely to find a vegan restaurant, but we just want to go out and eat dinner, right? We don't really mind if it's fully vegan or how vegan it is, or you know, if there's one thing on the menu that you can have that, for me when I'm in France, if it isn't chips and salad, although you know, I've got quite a taste for chips and salad now, you know, you just want them. So I agree, it's nice to have, and often when these things are judged, which is the best city, it might be just purely on vegan restaurants as opposed to options. I haven't traveled massively since being a vegan. I became a vegan in 2016, been a vegetarian since the 80s. But Porto in Portugal, by the way, if no one's been, I can thoroughly recommend it. Not only are there lots of vegan restaurants and vegan options, and they've got like vegan bakers and stuff as well, but very great vegan buffets where they kind of, you pay for the weight of the plate or you pay for a plate and you can have as much as you like. Very city centre, and so loads of people go into them. It's not just vegans, and I love to see that when it's just everyone. It's the massive queue down the street for them because they're good value for money and the food is really good. So I give a vote for Porto while we're on it, while we're talking about the best vegan cities in the world. Just makes me want to travel whenever I think about places that are good for vegan food. Bali apparently is good, also has a lot of Bali in Indonesia has a lot of vegan restaurants, and then Phuket in Thailand, so that's definitely a part of the world to go to. Does that surprise any of you about Thailand? I'm guessing it doesn't surprise you, Bridie, because you've been there, but what about you, Nadia? Yeah.
No, I mean, even when I went to Thailand about 35 years ago, showing my age again, when I went to Thailand about 35 years ago, they had vegetarian options. And I thought it was because they had, I don't know about the culture, you know, have a plant-based culture. I'm not sure about the Buddhism thing, but I thought it was because they have lots of like backpackers. I don't know, maybe backpackers like vegetarian food, or they liked vegetarian food 30 years ago, or I don't know. Or maybe people from all around the world, they had to cater to tourists from all around the world. So I don't know about these days.
That is a good point, actually. I don't know if any of you have been to the Lake District in England. But there's loads of vegetarian and vegan restaurants because people who like hiking and outdoors are, you know, there's a correlation there. So there could be something in that. It may have been an early explosion. But Bridie, I know you're going to know a bit more about this.
Yeah, I lived in Thailand for 10 years and I've thought it was very, very interesting there. So for those people that don't know Buddhism there's very much, there's a idea of ginje, which means to eat vegetables, and it's very, very similar to the approaches of Buddhism in throughout Asia, where, you know, monks only eat vegetarian, vegan food, and this definitely comes out a lot. And I noticed that the response from Thai people to this idea that, oh, actually I'm vegan, I'm ginje, you know, sometimes you would just say ginje because that was easier, because not everyone understands the word vegan, and even in English. And there was always a respect there, should say always, but a lot of the time there was a respect there. So instead of, you know, what sometimes happens, which was when you say that you're vegan, you know, you might sort of detect like a sneer, for example, there is often a sign of respect, and the response was often like, oh wow, you know, I couldn't do that, rather than like a, you know, this sneer. And I will also say that, you know, I found, generally speaking, Thailand is a place that is very innovative. They're flexible, they respond to trends, and if there's a market, then they will find a way to cater to it. It's really responsive in that way. And I always think of my dear friends, they did the first vegan bakery in 2013 in the farmers markets in Bangkok in 2013. And today they have 7 restaurants in Bangkok, which is just kind of an amazing growth. And it's just testament to, you know, figuring things out and seeing a need and being passionate about it and going for it. And, you know, Thailand's pretty big, business friendly as well, so that's quite nice as well. So maybe that's part of the reason Thailand and Southeast Asia is quite responsive to these trends.
It's interesting that you say about you know, sort of that you might not say you're vegan. My daughter went probably 2011 now. She went to China for a summer to teach, and she was vegetarian at the time. She's vegan now, but she just had to tell people she was Buddhist because they didn't understand the concept of being vegetarian. But if she said that she was Buddhist, they're like, oh yeah, okay, fine, we get that. You know, so it's really interesting, isn't it, the cultural differences of the labeling and what might be acceptable or understandable for people. And I suppose as well, seeing veganism as normal and being exposed to plant-based eating from a young age changes the way people view animals. I mean, cows are a sacred animal for the majority of the Hindu community, for example. And there are lots of different festivals as well. There's one in Nepal where people worship dogs. They make flower garlands for their necks and offer them different foods. Bridie, as someone who's travelled so extensively, have you seen examples of this as well?
Yes, many, but this one really, really sticks out because I just think it's just so wonderful. So Rwanda, that little country in Central Africa, we're actually heading there in a couple of weeks, but my timing's not right that I'm going to be able to see this particular festival. But as many people will know, Rwanda is one of the 3 countries in a small, small part of the world where you'll find mountain gorillas. And mountain gorillas are a very important part of Rwanda. They're an important habitat. Rwanda is doing an amazing job at protecting these mountain gorillas. The numbers have grown. And they have this lovely festival that they have every September called Kwita Izina. And it's sort of based on this ceremony that Rwandan people do when they like name their child in front of their friends and family. And basically every September there's this really big festival, like thousands and thousands of people come to Volcanoes National Park, and they name all of the baby gorillas that have been born in that year. And it's a really, really, really big deal. It's really, really special. You know, they do little presents. I mean, they don't bring the baby gorillas out onto the stage at all, anything like that, but they have photos of these little new gorillas, and they're all officially named in this very respectful, lovely way. And I just think this is a wonderful festival. If you happen to be in Rwanda in September, that's something you can definitely go check out.
Sounds fantastic. I mean, when you say if you happen to be in Rwanda in September, I mean, that sounds like a calendar date for someone who's an adventurous traveller and thinks never been to Rwanda. That sounds like an amazing thing. Sari, have you done much travelling outside of Japan? And, you know, has it been like a Pandora's box of exciting delights to be able to eat whatever you like, wherever, to come out the closet?
So I have done a bit of travel. I think I've been to more than 20 countries so far, but mostly it was before I became vegan. And so since I became vegan, the places I really liked was Portland in the US. Not only that they have many vegan, like 100% vegan places, but they, like Nadia said, that Portland also has many places, like most of the places have vegan options, and then people know about veganism and it's just so easy to be around. And also Taipei in Taiwan, they were also really vegan friendly place. People know, like people don't really know the term vegan, but if you explain, and they will understand.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? It's nice when you get somewhere and you're like, oh, and especially if you don't expect it. I was in Vienna in Austria, and I always think of, you know, Austria and Germany as being very kind of meat-based places. And And there were lots of places that purely vegan, but also did options. And I hadn't really looked it up before I got there. Because often I think as vegans, we often travel somewhere because we know we can eat stuff. And that was why I ended up in Porto. Me and my daughter went for a break in Porto, and she's vegan. And, you know, she said, we're going to Porto. And I was like, why? And she's like, because we could eat loads. Okay. It just happens to be a great city for lots of other reasons as well. But I think for me, I hadn't really looked into Vienna. My partner was on a business trip. I said, I'd go along. I was thinking, oh God, you know, it's going to be really difficult. But actually, it was a delight and a surprise. What do you think, Bridie, we can learn from other countries that you've traveled to particularly, about veganism, about, you know, how it sits and how we, what can we utilize?
So when we dig a little bit deeper into a country's culinary heritage, we often find that there is some really interesting, like, vegan foods going on there, accidentally vegan, naturally vegan, and these of course are really, really interesting things to learn about. So I definitely think that we should be doing that. And we can also really notice and observe how countries and cultures approach veganism as well. Like, for example, you know, I've been lucky enough to work with lots of non-vegan hotels, like in rural France, for example. And, you know, that they're not combative to the ideas necessarily. Like, if in the right kind of situation, they will embrace these kinds of things. You know, you can't really imagine in the countryside of France that there is this little hotel that caters to vegan groups all of the time, and they create incredible vegan versions of traditional French cuisine. And so, you know, we often think that there's lots of stereotypes to a place, but actually, you know, that they're human just like everybody else, and they are, as individuals, creative or responsive or dismissive and all of these things. So I guess, I don't know whether that's a very good answer, but that's what comes to mind.
No, it is a good answer. And I think actually just the idea of asking, because I know I get, sometimes I'm like, oh, I'll just have the chips and salad because, you know, my French isn't very good, or, you know, I'll just have whatever, or I just won't eat here, or we'll stay in an Airbnb instead of a hotel, and then we can do all our own food. And, you know, because sometimes it can be a little bit exhausting, but actually you have those wins where you do ask and they're like, oh yeah, absolutely, we'll make something for you. Especially if you ask in advance, if you just ring up, you know, we're coming, but, you know, could you make something? And I think that is a bit of I mean, that can be difficult with a language barrier, but I think that is, you know, something that we all ought to try and push for a little bit more. So Nadia and Sarah, you know, it sounds like it's certainly been very difficult to be vegan in Japan up until now. And it sounds like you two are certainly agents for change over there. I'm interested to know, because you're the official agents for the vegan trademark, Nadia, are you knocking on people's doors? You know, are people coming to you? How does it work in a country where, you know, are you sitting there twiddling your thumbs like, perhaps we'll get a vegan in this week? Yeah.
If we did that, we're actually quite out and about. We're doing lots of things like seminars, and we're being guest speakers at various events, and we're kind of like, you know, making events. Like, we made a new vegan business meetup group thingy to try to bring vegan business people together to discuss how to, you know, push the envelope. Is that the right expression? I'm not sure. To push the conversation forward. And we're doing, like, you know, various marketing things, like trade events. There's one thing I do want to say, I think, that goes a little bit, ties in with what we were talking about before. A lot of companies in Japan, I think we talked before about, is veganism a fad? And a lot of companies in Japan still think that veganism is a fad and they don't need to make products. And so although we do have like a plant-based food culture in Japan, it's completely lost in the mists of time at the moment. So what we try to tell companies is that veganism is not a fad. It's a movement which is evolving to meet the needs of the modern world. I mean, it's unsustainable and dangerous to keep on eating animals. And once consumers learn that, and also about the cruelty involved, it's a natural choice to move towards products and foods which are kinder to animals and the planet. So I think we're trying to get the message out that veganism is a modern, forward-moving thing, you know, that they want to be part of. I think we can definitely draw on wisdom and knowledge from the past where it exists, but I think we want to get the message out a lot that it's something new for today and appropriate for tomorrow, and it's appropriate for every kind of culture and spiritual. Making vegan options is appropriate for every culture and spiritual belief, despite what cultural background you have. It doesn't have to be a conflict. Does that make sense?
It does, it does.
In conflict with anything you're doing right now, any food culture. It's just like a different version kind of thing.
Right. Considering the culture we have in Japan also, that the vegans are not inclusive and vegans have to stay in the closet, having a vegan option is very important. So that is very basic and one of the first things we should probably implement. And also, yeah, like Nadia was saying earlier, companies don't really like to put that this product is vegan or like this cafe is vegan or plant-based, because company doesn't want to make a mistake. And so also improving labeling system in Japan is really confusing, and you can't really tell what the ingredients are by just looking at the label. And so those two things, like improving label system and having a vegan option, is definitely something we should implement to make the country a vegan friendly place.
Sounds like you're going in the right direction. It sounds like you've got a big ship to turn. So it's going to take a while to get to the level of Thailand or Paris or, you know, some of the other cities and countries around the world. But it sounds like you two are there doing your thing and making an important change over there. So that's great news. Well, listen, it's been fabulous to talk to all three of you about veganism around the world, and it's definitely made me want to book a trip somewhere. Find my next vegan friendly city break and go and indulge in it. So yeah, thank you so much. A big thanks to our guest, Bridie Reed, co-founder of tour company World Vegan Travel. You can find her on Facebook under World Vegan Travel and on Instagram at World Vegan Travel. Also to Nadia and Sauri from the Vegan Consulting Japan. And you can find more info by visiting their website, veganconsulting.jp. And if you'd like to let us know your thoughts on today's episode or share your experiences and challenges around traveling as a vegan and growing up as a vegan in another country or culture, you can email us on podcast@vegansociety.com or follow us on Twitter @vegansociety or on Instagram @theoriginalvegansociety or on Facebook. We'll be back for another episode of the Vegan Pod soon. So if you've enjoyed the discussion today, don't forget to subscribe so that you do not miss an episode. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Come to Japan and see us.